What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet, presented by Off the Glass. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and two special guests today, Jorge Cantu and Nick Cuavo. What's up, guys? How are we doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Thanks for having me on, Nick.
Yeah, I'm glad, as always, to be back, and I'm ready for the discussion, man.
Yeah, I feel like today is going to be a little bit spicy. I got a feeling.
It's going to be an interesting show. We got double Knicks for, I think, the first time ever in outlet history, so that's pretty cool. But as always, quick reminder, you can check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But guys, happy holidays to everybody, but let's get right into it. We're going to start with James Harden. He's been on a tear lately, you know, getting the Rockets back into the playoffs, just dominating for pretty much the whole month of December. I think he's averaging over 38 points. Where does he stand in the MVP race?
I think right now, for me, he's top three, right? He's hanging right up there with Giannis and LeBron. His case is really building. Yeah, this recent hot stretch of games has just been absolutely nuts. You're right there, 39 points, close to a triple-double. The true shooting percentage off the charts, he's up near 60. PER, right around 30. Like, this dude's stats, like, read like a Hall of Famer. So, like, absolutely, he might repeat this year.
For me, he's right up there with Kawhi fighting for the third spot in the MVP ladder, because obviously we have Giannis at number one. Then I have LeBron at number two. And then I think it's just a tough fight between Harden and Kawhi. But with how good Harden has played lately, it will be crazy to ignore all the near 40-point averages he's putting up lately. And also, I just saw Harden play against the Miami Heat last week. It was actually a nail biter. Sorry, it was a 2-point game. We pulled it off, but I just lost track of how many step back contested three pointers that is James Harden made over defenders, and it seems like he does this on a nightly basis, and all these things get overlooked. And he's very, very skilled, and somehow is managing to pull off a better statistical season than his MVP one, which is crazy to think. So I think he deserves to be right there, and especially with him getting the Rockets back on the playoff run. I think the Rockets are now sixth in the Western Conference, so it's just a matter of him, you know, keeping the foot on the pedal gas and getting them atop the Western Conference standings so he can get his name, at the top of the MVP conversation and try to win it again.
All right, so I guess I'm not as high on James Harden as some of you guys. I think James Harden's in the top five for MVP now, in my opinion. He's not in my top three yet. I don't know. I guess that's a hot take so far on this episode. But I still have Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, and Paul George ahead of him. Obviously, this last month, this last stretch for Harden has been incredible. The Rockets are back in the playoff picture. They're on the up and up, and this is all without Chris Paul playing alongside Harden. He's averaging 32.7 points per game, which is two more than last season, in which he won MVP, as you guys mentioned. The three-point percentage is the career high, I believe, or second career high. I think he's climbing the ladder, but I don't think I have him in the top three just yet. And I have LeBron at five behind Harden at four.
Oh,
yeah, I think Harden probably, you know, some people will have him top five, some will have him top three. I think based off his latest play and where the Rockets were at and where they are now compared to being, I think they were like second to last of West like a month ago, and now they're in the sixth seed. I think you guys all brought up great points that averaging 32 a game and over 8 assists, you know, he's pretty much carrying the Rockets and getting them back in the contention by himself. So the next question is, where would the Rockets be without James Harden?
Oh, right now, I was easily a lottery team. Like these guys without James Harden, it's like you got a lot. The West is a gauntlet this year. All 13 teams with real legitimate in the West absolutely be eliminated without him right now. You know, like even with a healthy Chris Paul, healthy Rockets roster, I don't think the playoffs right now without James Harden. Absolutely.
Yeah, I have to agree right there. It's James Harden who creates a lot of the trouble for opposing teams. His playmaking, him just being a threat to shoot step back threes, drive with all the fouls he's drawing. I think almost all the attention from opponents is on him, which is why sometimes it's very easy for Clint Capella to catch alley-oops and just throw it down, or for Eric Gordon, who's been playing much better, to get open shots. Same for PJ Tucker in the corners. And, I mean, just the persona of James Harden, knowing how tough he is driving to the paint, he'll get the foul calls, but he can still kick out. The opposing teams are always on the edge of their seats trying to, well, guess what his next move will be. So definitely maybe, 13 or 14th in the West? Well, taking into account how Chris Paul is currently playing, because that would have Clint Capella as the best player on the team, which says a lot. So, yeah, nothing good.
Yeah, this team probably wouldn't have 10 wins without James Harden. And then, I mean, if Chris Paul's been as hurt as he has been so far this season, then, I mean, maybe it's different. But this team is definitely in the bottom of the West, probably just a couple games better than the Suns without James Harden.
Other than Giannis, would you say that he means more to his team than all the other MVP candidates?
Other than Giannis? Yeah, for sure. I mean, I have LeBron regarded very highly, especially just with the recent two Lakers games where you've seen them do some have some late game collapses, just overall not nearly as good without LeBron. Again, like another team, you can make the case that they probably wouldn't be in the playoffs without their star player. Antetokounmpo, yeah, take Antetokounmpo off the Bucks, and in this East, they might sniff around the 8 seed, but yeah, you're right. Probably one of the single most important players in the NBA to their roster.
Yeah, maybe, like, I also think, for example, Steph Curry is very valuable, but then you take him away and you still have three other All-Stars, so it doesn't matter that much. But as an individual impact, yeah, definitely Giannis and Harden are atop the ladder right now, because they do so much. Harden's also actually averaging a career-high 2.1 steals, getting his hands a little bit more active on defense. So both of them do so much, probably more than anyone else in the NBA right now, alongside LeBron. And, well, they deserve the credit.
I mean, I think you can make a really good case for Paul George this year, especially with how inefficient Russell Westbrook has been at times this year. The lack of offensive presence that team has. I think they're still bottom three in three-point percentage. So I think you can make the case that Paul George has been just as valuable to that team. So I don't think the Thunder are nearly as high. Maybe not even in the playoff picture if they don't have Paul George playing the way he's been playing so far this year.
Definitely an interesting case with Paul George. I would say James Harden produces more offense, but you can make the argument for Paul George's defense with that whole team being so good defensively. But it leads to the next thing. This has been a major topic with James Harden for probably the last 3 years. Do you feel he's an underappreciated star in this league, that a lot of people just hate him because he goes to the free throw line, or that it's fair to dislike him?
Oof. Well, yeah, this is the Harden debate, right? Like, is he a transcendent all-time offensive guard, or has he mastered how to get to the line? You know, has he mastered getting the refs to give him the calls? And for me, it's definitely a little bit of both. Like, I'm not going to lie, I've had my moments of frustration watching him play and drawing those shooting fouls, just like beyond the arc, you know. But honestly, that's like drawing fouls is a part of the game, right? So for me, it's more of a skill thing. This guy's skill level's off the charts. The fact that he's getting to the line at historic rates is, you know, it's really a good for him, good for the Rockets sort of deal, right? So yeah, I'd have to agree.
I mean, I get where people come from when they get angry with all these insane calls James Harden gets at times. But a lot of my perspective on Harden changed when I saw this last game he had against the Heat, because he's so skilled that I don't think he deserves a lot of the criticism he gets, because it's kind of unfair to slander a player who is so good just for certain things he does. Like, he kind of exploits certain aspects of the game. But, I mean, it's in the rule book. You can't do anything about it. And I previously didn't have Harden in such high esteem. But now, after watching these last couple of games, well, not watching them, but yeah, looking how the games have unfolded and how they're actually translating to wins, and the Rockets are actually playing better, I definitely believe more in James Harden.
I mean, there's a reason why he won MVP last season. There's a reason why he was in the conversation with the year before. The slander towards James Harden is honestly ridiculous. But then again, if we remember Anytime you have a transcendent talent, there's always resistance. I mean, LeBron James, when he was becoming the best player, we all hated him. Well, not all of us, but I know I hated him. And then, like, for example, when Stephen Curry bursted onto the scene, he started having his MVP years. He wasn't very well-liked at first either. It's just one of those – it's kind of how it starts. When you – before you officially arrive, everyone hates you. And then when you establish yourself, and then it seems that people are more open to accepting you. So I think James Harden is just in that period where he's becoming a top five – a consistent top five player in the league, and people just are having backlash to that. But I can't see how you can't watch, the 41-point outburst he had on Christmas against the Thunder, the 41 points or 40 points the other night against the Celtics. Yeah, you can say that maybe his step back at times is a travel, depending on how you look at it. But, I know I get slightly annoyed by his antics, but there's no question that he is, probably the best shooting guard in the league right now. And he's absolutely phenomenal. So the hate is not warranted, but I understand it.
Yeah, I think Nick brought up a great point that drawing fouls is a skill, and I think that's something he's mastered. People aren't going to like it, but it's just something you do. You know, we've compared in the past quarterbacks drawing offsides or catching 12 men on the field. So I think it's just something that James Harden does. Corey mentioned him being a consistent top five player. Would you guys all agree that he's a lock to be a top five player right now, or is there still a question if maybe some guys could jump him?
Oof. Yeah, right now I'd have to give him top five, but that's – top five is very subjective, right? And he's like for me, it's his defensive growth, right? Because a lot of one-way players, one-way offensive players particularly, don't really get to enjoy being part of that top five conversation all the time, right? Because we look for two-way ability there. But the 2.1 steals this year, plus just, the combined load that the team's putting on him, he's residing in my top five for sure right now, yeah.
I don't really know if I would put him in my top five, because in my preseason top five leaderboards, I didn't even have Giannis or Kawhi. Kawhi for the fact that he was injured, and Giannis because I just wanted to see a little bit more, which I definitely am right now. So it's
so give us your top five, Jorge. Pressure's on.
Okay, so I have LeBron, Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, and then it's James Harden, Anthony Davis, but. With Giannis playing as good as he has, and with Davis putting up monster numbers, and with Kawhi making it work in Toronto, it's very hard. Like, very, very hard. I think right now Harden should be fifth, just behind the fourth place Giannis. But that leaves Kawhi up. So, you see, it's a never-ending dilemma. So, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm just in the limbo.
I think without a question, Harden has to be top five. I think anytime you're finishing in the, he was runner up for MVP, then he won MVP. Actually, you can even go farther than that. He was in the top three for MVP, runner up for MVP, won MVP, and now he's putting up better numbers than he did last year in his MVP year. I think that says it all right there, that you're a top five player if you're in the MVP race. I know we subject MVP to having to be on, the team that is running the top of the conferences. Obviously, Russell Westbrook proved that wrong when he won a triple-double. But I think if you're in the MVP conversation, you're in the top five for MVP the last, three, 4 years, you're probably a top five player without a question in my eyes.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Corey, and especially because you're carrying your team so much and having so much of the offensive load on you. It's definitely an interesting conversation. I think the top five is harder than it ever has been with Giannis and Kawhi playing so well. But that's for another show. Talk about somebody who's in top five contention. And there's been a lot of talk about him and his team, especially struggling of late, and that's New Orleans Pelicans with Anthony Davis, 16-20. The Pelicans were started off super hot, looking like they could be one of the best teams in the West and possibly go to the Western Conference Finals. Do you think AD gets a pass in New Orleans, or it's more so on the roster than it is on him?
Oh, I think when the Pelicans don't make the playoffs and when AD decides to leave the Pelicans, whether it be that next year when free agency opens or when he submits his trade request, I don't think New Orleans is going to be blaming AD for all of it. I think this is definitely a fault of Dell Demps, the front office, years of inability to surround this guy with a competent roster. This is like he can't keep putting up monster numbers every single year. He finally won his first playoff series last year, and it looks like they're about to regress, right? And that's after adding Mirotić, and Julius Randle. And so they fleshed out this roster to the best of their capability, but is that doing Anthony Davis justice? I don't think so. And I think it alleviates a lot of the blame or a lot of the burden of blame from him, his shoulders personally.
Well, I kind of disagree there. I think the roster that they have assembled this year is quite good and competent, as we saw at the beginning of the season. But it's just all the injuries that they have suffered lately. Nikola Mirotic not being able to play a bunch of games. Elfrid Payton also with a thumb injury and then something else before. Julius Randle missed a couple of games. Even Anthony Davis had his, injury issues right there. So it just seems like they're always injured and at the worst times. I mean, they have lost five of their last six games. And I don't think the blame at all is on Anthony Davis, because this man's averaging almost 30 points, 16 boards, 2.3 blocks, and only turning it over 1.5 times per game. I mean, he's doing as much as he can. What else can he do? Like, there's only so much a superstar player can do to push his team over the limit. And Jrue Holiday's playing very good as well. Maybe not as good as Davis, but they're doing their best. And if the team is not contributing, whatever it may be, injuries or just their shots are not falling, whatever, well, that's not on them. They're doing all they can, I guess.
I mean, you look at his last they won last night against Dallas, and if you look at the last five games in which they all lost, Anthony Davis had a double-double in every game, 27 and 12, 27 and 11, 30 and 20, 26 and 17, 32 and 18, at least a block in every game. Three of those games he had more than three blocks, and they're losing. You guys both make good points. It's not solely on Anthony Davis. There's no way you can blame a superstar who's putting up double-doubles and all of these monster stat lines and not winning. Granted, his I know – I can't remember who tweeted it out. I know his number
– I have them right in front of me if you want them.
So 40% from the field, right, Nick? And like 12% from three, am I right?
So we got in 18 games, 6-12 in clutch, averaging 1.9 points, 45% from the field, 10% from three, and 50% from the free throw line, including one rebound, 0.1 assist, 0.1 turnover, 0.2 steals, 0.1 block.
Yeah, I mean – That's terrible.
Yeah,
the scoring wise, that's your best player is becoming non-existent when you need him most, despite all the big numbers he's putting up. Now, could you say that's from fatigue? Yeah, okay. He had to do it for 38 minutes, maybe the last, or 36 minutes. In the last 5 minutes, he fell apart, or he was just exhausted. I mean, that is a factor. It does happen, but he hasn't been effective. And I know I watched the other night. I think they lost to Dallas.
They beat Dallas. Beat Dallas last night.
No, they had a home and home against Dallas though.
Oh, right.
I can't remember who, but they were down by two or three, and Davis took the game tying or game winning three. And I just don't understand why in certain situations you don't give it to like Jrue Holiday in those kind of clutch times. Like, I would be so much more comfortable with Jrue Holiday taking a game ending three than Anthony Davis, despite who the better player is. So I think it also is just kind of the sets they run at the end of the game. Just because Davis is the best player doesn't mean he needs to take the game tying or game winning three. I know that's a small little tidbit, but I don't put it all on Davis, but it's definitely concerning that they're just not winning and he's putting up these numbers.
Yeah, there's been criticism of him taking too many jump shots late in games. That's kind of why his numbers are down instead of consistently attacking inside, and I think that's what they want to see more. Now, in comparison, there's no question that AD's putting up crazy numbers, but in comparison to, let's say, LeBron or James Harden or Steph Curry, if any of their teams were not in the playoffs, do you think they would see more heat than AD seeing right now? And it's kind of like, all right, the Pelicans just haven't been that great. They had a good season last year, but we're kind of used to them not making the playoffs.
Yeah, well, yeah. Personally, I think the Pelicans benefit from just people not having a very high standard of them, and I don't know whose responsibility that is. Like, who's the person who's supposed to be hyping up the Pelicans, right? Like, Curry's got Golden State, which is in the middle of like a dynastic run, right? So to see anything less than greatness makes you wonder, right? Even recently, they haven't been putting up the kind of winning numbers we've been wanting to see, and people are harping on them already, right? I've never seen Twitter more hateful of the Warriors than with this current regular season malaise they're in. And then, yeah, LeBron with the Lakers, another historic franchise, but this is AD with the Pelicans, right? And I've never come into a season with anybody expecting the Pelicans to be better than a 5-6 seed at best, right? So it has to do with holding a standard, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, well, Nick was just right on point with everything he said. Like, when you're putting up these big numbers, as I said before, there's only so much you can do. And people, like, at the beginning of the season, the Pelicans were just outscoring other teams, and they were not playing, you know, that much of a tough defense. They were just outscoring them. But now with all of the, you know, they're lacking all the scoring, that's when they're getting into their troubles. And I want to say something, just something we touched on earlier. I don't think the Pelicans would be in all of those late-game woes if they would just execute for the rest of the game like they have done before. Once again, you can point to injuries, missing shots, whatever, but I think they're just not executing as well during the games as they were at the, you know, earlier portion of the season. So that's also something to keep an eye on.
Anything from you, Corey, or are you pretty much spot on what Nick said?
I'm sitting here like trying to think if I got anything else to add, but no, both guys covered it really well. I mean, it's funny how I remember like start of the year, this team was obviously on fire. We were talking about how dominant they look, and someone had made the hot take they were going to be in the Western Conference Finals, and it looked like a really good take.
That's not aging well.
Is that your take, Corey?
No, that was Jake's, and I agree with the way they were playing early on, but. Like what Ray said, injuries pretty much taking them out, and they look like they lost pretty much a lot of the confidence they had early in the year.
Yeah, and you made a good point, Nick, when you opened this up. I do think that because the Pelicans have always been, or not always been, but the last stretch of time, they've been that bottom of the West team kind of battling for a playoff spot, maybe not always getting over the edge, that we don't really pay attention to the fact that when they're down there. We pay attention to the fact when they're above their ceiling, but we don't really give them we don't give them enough probably harshness for how they play. Cause I mean, this team does have a lot of talent on it, at least big name talent between just Drew and Anthony Davis. This should be a playoff team on paper.
Yeah. And I mean, Julius Randle's been awesome for them too.
Yeah.
And then Mirotić when he's healthy has been really good too. So I think it's definitely an interesting situation. Health has been a concern. I know listening to the bird calls, like depth has been a major issue for them. Maybe adding some more role players will be huge. It's a team that's been very active in free agency, but moving on from there, got a little game, so I'm going to give you guys two players, two coaches, two teams, whatever it is, and you're going to instantly say which one is better. It's got to be quick and fast. So first off, to start it off, kind of carries on with the theme we've had so far, James Harden or Anthony Davis?
Anthony Davis.
All right, give me Anthony Davis.
James Harden.
Oh, I love it, Corey. I'm going with James Harden. you guys elaborate a little bit on why you made the picks.
Okay, well, for me, it's just a two-way play, right? Like, and even though Harden's been great on the defensive end this year, like, Anthony Davis very well could shape up to be a defensive player of the year candidate come year's end, right? Versus, like, I don't really think that's a conversation we'll see Harden in. And, like, Harden deserves a lot of credit, right? Especially with this torrid start. But I think once Chris Paul comes back, you'll see some of those stats start to seed. And this kind of everyone's really in on Harden right now, but I think AD's has a little bit more of a consistent reputation, at least over the course of like this season, and we'll be able to put a lot more. There's no other star players coming back to join Anthony Davis is basically what I'm saying, right? So if he turns around this ship of the Pelicans right now and gets them back into the playoffs, I think Anthony Davis would be the majority choice by the end of it when it's all said and done.
Bring up a point real quick to quicken on Jorge. I don't know. There's an argument right now that you could make that Drew Holiday's playing better than Chris Paul's played all season.
Oh, definitely.
Fair point. Yep.
So I that's something I would consider. But Jorge, what was your thoughts on picking AD?
I mean, Anthony Davis is great on any team, and he's a good team player. As Nick also brought up, he plays some good defense. And Harden is much more reliable on ISO ball and on if his teammates are making the shots he creates for them. So I just think Davis at the end of the day can be more impactful by himself, maybe just slightly, than James Harden, because Harden is also kind of dependent on his shots, and AD just, well, I think he's just takes more efficient shots. And I would rather have AD because I'm more of I like two-way players. And but I think it could go either way. But I'll take Davis in this one.
I mean, for me, I took this as like, what have you done for me lately kind of attitude. And I mean, over the past month, I think James Harden, we could all agree, has definitely been the better player. I'm not sure I would say overall Anthony Davis is not the better player. But I think especially in this point in time, this stretch, what team is having the most success? Because if you remember, both these teams are out of the playoff picture. I think they were either one spot or two spots next to each other in the bottom of the Western Conference just a couple weeks ago. And now one team has ascended, one team hasn't. Both teams have a superstar. both superstars are putting up numbers, but one guy's closing out games and winning and the other guy's disappearing. So for me, that's why I have James Harden above Anthony Davis.
Yeah, I think the major factor for Harden here is that he's creating so much offense, and at times that can be an issue for AD creating by himself and settling for jump shots. You know, Harden can settle for jump shots, but he's going to make the step back threes, and he's making his teammates better by creating. Obviously, defense, like you guys said, AD's a defensive player of the year type of player. James Harden will never be, he'll be at best above average defender. But I have another question. If you were to swap AD and James Harden this year, do you think the Pelicans would be in the playoff picture? Well, in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, I think so. I think the Pelicans would be in the playoff picture. They'd be fringe, but you're right. Harden just does so much offensively, and obviously his clutch stats hold up. Like he seems to actually just get better as the game goes on, in the big moments this year, at least.
In the regular season, at least.
In the regular season. Everyone thinks back to that Spurs series, right, where he just kind of quit on the Rockets 2 years ago. But put Harden on the Pelicans. That backcourt tandem of him and Drew with working through big men in the post, like Julius and Mirotić. Yeah, they'd be in the playoffs for me. Would the Rockets be in the playoffs with Anthony Davis on them? Maybe if they had a healthy Chris Paul orchestrating. But with no healthy Chris Paul orchestrating, I think the Rockets probably not actually be in the playoffs.
Yeah, with this hypothetical swap, I don't like the fit on either team. Like, I think it's much better as it is right now. But if we had to swap them, I think the Pelicans would become better adding James Harden than the Rockets would become better adding Anthony Davis. And yeah, well, Nick mentioned just how insane this backcourt of Drew Holiday and James Harden would be. You could even have James Harden play point guard and just go ISO ball and have Drew as a secondary ball handler, and, you know, off-ball shooter, whatever you want to do. And then inside, you're still pretty good with Julius, and you can have Nico playing the four. And then you have your wing shooters like Etuan Moore and, well, Darius Miller and anybody they have, Solomon Hill. So I think that would be still, you know, pretty good.
Yeah.
Definitely the playoffs.
It's a sweep for us on this. I agree. I think the Pelicans would be the same, if not better, obviously, with James Harden. I think the Rockets would take a step back with Anthony Davis. I don't think that it doesn't work as well with what D'Antoni's offense runs. We could also make the point that Alvin Gentry might be on the hot seat if this continues. But
he was on the hot seat prior to the playoffs last year, and now he might be back on it. That's a really good point, Corey, and that's something we'll probably bring up later on. Next duo, though, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant.
Curry. I'm sorry, I had to jump in. That's not even why are we hesitating?
Quick release.
Oh, well, I'm waiting for Nick, but for me, it's definitely Curry, no question.
Yeah, it's Curry. I the reason I hesitate is just like, it's, I always think like, who would you rather have in a game of blacktop? You know, like, I'm like, who am I taking? I'm always thinking it's KD, right? But no, as time and time seems to prove, every single game played without Curry, Curry's the more important player. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much the same thing for me. I'm going with Steph here. I think his impact on the court is really felt, where sometimes KD will get his, but it doesn't usually directly make his teammates better or make the offense flow better. And we saw that last year in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, Durant.
Oh, go ahead, Corey.
I was going to say, Durant had some like really quiet 35-point games where like it's like, oh, he has 35, whereas when like Curry has 35, you're like, oh, shit, Curry's got 35.
Yeah, or it's like Curry has 27, and you're like freaking out because he just hit three threes that are like off bounds, falling out of bounds, and like there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, there's just so much of a show. In watching Steph Curry play is just so beautiful. Even
I like that.
You know, the distributing, but he just controls the game so well and can. I mean, he might be the most feared man in the NBA. When we compare players that step on the court, and I think it's, you know, he might be easily the most feared man. So, yeah, when you have people covering him from half court, I will definitely take Mr. Curry.
Clean sweep for Steph. Next duo, we got Joel Embiid and Kyrie Irving.
Oh, okay. Right now, I'm gonna go Embiid. Kyrie's great, don't get me wrong, and he's putting up career highs and pretty much in like what, field goal percentage, 3-point percentage. He's been great, don't get me wrong, especially with the early floundering Celtics, right, where they just haven't realized all this roster potential and all these questions of fit. Embiid has done a lot more for his Sixers team, especially, I mean, the Sixers have concerns of fit on their own end, but they seem to be winning games through it anyways, right? I've been reading a fair bit with them fattening up on an easy schedule, but no, Embiid's numbers and consistent production, especially with integrating Butler midseason. No, I'm going to hang with Embiid on this one.
Yeah, I'm also on the Embiid ship, and it's just basically, well, what Nick said was on point, and we're going back to the two-way player thing, and it's just, well, Embiid is much more impactful. And I've heard people say, oh, yeah, Kyrie's better, but it's just kind of like more like the Celtics system, and Embiid by himself, he's just such a dominant inside presence. So I'll take Embiid.
I'm going with Kyrie.
Corey stays switching it up. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going with Kyrie. And I mean, you guys are right. Embiid is definitely the at this point in time, probably is definitely the better player. The Shaq-like numbers, he's been ridiculous. But he's kind of taken a step back, as he's even mentioned, since Jimmy Butler has come to town. He's been complaining at times about his offensive touches. Whereas, at least from what I can recall from memory, the last month or so, I feel like Kyrie Irving's been on another level again. I feel like he's playing some of the best basketball I've seen him play since he was healthy in Cleveland. So I give this slight edge to Kyrie. And as we know, when Kyrie's jersey comes untucked, he's the best player in the league.
Do you think it's somewhat of the fact that maybe you can take Embiid out of the game like we've seen Boston do, and you can't really take Kyrie out of the game because even with extremely good defense like we saw in the finals when he's on Cleveland, when Clay was locking him up, he was able to get his and win them the game?
No, when Kyrie's on his finals roll, no one's stopping Kyrie, right? Like this guy's got all the spin moves, all the English, all of the tricks that make him just impossible to guard. He creates space probably better than anybody but a handful of guards in NBA history.
Yeah, I mean, Kyrie's a proven veteran, and he knows how to get the job done. And Embiid is much more of still a long-term project, because he's barely scratching the surface of what he can do. And Kyrie's more like, okay, in his prime. But I think Embiid will be able to. Well, right now, I still think Embiid is slightly better and more impactful. But long term, I just think I like Embiid a little bit more. And the way he gets in his opponent's heads, that's also something to keep an eye on. I like that.
On to our next duo. We got the Milwaukee Bucks and the Philadelphia 76ers. Who's a better team?
Milwaukee Bucks, next.
Milwaukee Bucks, next.
Milwaukee Bucks, next.
Now, no love for the Sixers at all. You know, they do obviously add Jimmy Butler, and they haven't got fully in sync yet. Do you think come playoff time that they could be the better team?
Oh, man. I just think Budenholzer is a completely different class of coach than Brett Brown. Like my heart goes out to Brett Brown. Good for him, but honestly, yeah, and they have some recent star power coming in. Might be questions of chemistry, you know, long-term ceiling. But the way Budenholzer's got this offense and defense humming with knowing these guys for only 30-something games, these Bucks to me look a lot more dangerous than these Sixers might be this whole season, even come playoffs time. You know, I don't think the Sixers have enough time in the world to catch up to where these Bucks are right now in terms of scheme and chemistry.
Yeah, you might remember I wrote an article before the season started in the summer about the Bucks and the impact my Budenholzer would have. And it's turned to be like it has aged well, this one.
Yeah.
And I just think that the way Budenholzer sets the offense, I remember reading some article from ESPN where Budenholzer actually like put marks on the court like with tape where the three-point shooters should be standing and how to make sure to give Giannis the proper spacing. And when you have four shooters and Giannis in there, it's very similar to when you have four shooters and LeBron on the court. Giannis is approaching those levels of danger, and it's just Giannis can just cook whomever he wants. You get the help. Off to the three-point shooter. It's an easy equation, and it's leading to success thus far, and I think it will come playoff time.
Yeah, I mean, as Nick knows and the guys who listen to the outlet, I had the Bucks as my dark horse to be in the Eastern Conference Finals. I love the addition of Budenholzer. I love what he could bring to this offense when he actually got his system in place. And as I mentioned to Nick numerous times before, I just didn't think it was going to happen this quickly. But they have Antetokounmpo with so much room to operate in the open floor. They got a beautiful space to their offense with all these guys shooting. Bledsoe is having a tremendous year. Middleton's been solid. Brogdon's been healthy. I like their depth a lot more. The addition of George Hill, even though it's a small move and Hill isn't the kind of player he was a few years ago, he's still a really good backup point guard, and he just fits what they're trying to do. So I think for them, it's they're way farther ahead than Philadelphia. Even though Philly may have more like true star power between their guys, they don't have the kind of depth to match up with Milwaukee, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the fit is really good in Milwaukee. I think one thing, Brook Lopez has been huge for the Bucks, giving you a spacing center that just pretty much opens up the paint completely, especially when the guy can knock down 7 threes in the game. Denver Nuggets or OKC Thunder?
Ooh, OKC Thunder.
Yeah, give me OKC Thunder as well.
What was the other team, Nick? Thunder and who?
Nuggets.
Thunder.
Oh,
no, Nuggets. I'm going to the Nuggets. Sorry.
Yeah, I was surprised. I was going to say, you know, you've been loving the Nuggets a lot.
I'm sorry. I for a second, I forgot that Denver's not healthy yet. Yeah,
Denver. Yeah, let's assume Denver is fully healthy. Would that change your opinion, Nick or Jorge?
No, if OKC's healthy, no, I'm still taking OKC.
Hell no. I'm loving I've been highly critical of Russell Westbrook, but, man, I'm liking what I'm seeing from him and Paul George, obviously.
Corey, how would you retort?
I would just retort, when you add a starting five worth of talent back to your roster, I think you're going to get a lot better. There's no Paul Millsap. There's no Will Barton. There's no Gary Harris. There's no Isaiah Thomas. And there's no Michael Porter Jr. There's no way you can tell me that you add those five players to any team, that team doesn't get a enormous amount better. And Denver is still winning without those five guys. And the only piece that OKC is really going to get back in the future is Andre Roberson, which isn't going to help them offensively. And I, even though I'm a very big, big defense-oriented guy and I enjoy defense, and defense wins championships is still my mantra, I think Denver's offense would be just extremely overpowering. And they're playing really good defense this year, not the type of defense that OKC is playing, but I like what the entire unit of Denver would look like healthy compared to OKC.
And Denver's bench would be a lot better when healthy. I think OKC's problem is their bench right now. It hasn't really shown up because they played so well, but Evan Dial just wrote a great article, his lineups of the week, and he pointed out the differential between the OKC bench in terms of the starters, and it's pretty big.
Yeah, give me that playoff series, man. That is a second-round West playoff series. Wow. That's a nice one.
Yeah, it would be.
It's imagine opposite. A 1-4 seed series, that would be dope. And I'm still on the side of, you know, I love defense, and I just think that like a great or the best defensive team has all the cards in their hand at any given time. And I'm not the biggest Nikola Jokic supporter out there for a different couple of reasons. But who knows? Maybe he changes my mind.
That without telling us the reasons.
Yeah. Well, I can say that without the reasons.
Yeah, I said you can't say it without telling us the reasons why you don't like him.
I mean, for one, I just don't think an unathletic center would be as successful in the long run. Like, I get how he's one of the best if not the best playmaking big man in the league right now. But I don't know. I'm just not buying that one. Like, I don't have like this super logical big reasoning behind, but I don't know. I just don't. And I never felt, I'm very surprised actually, because Jokic he's holding his own on defense this season. And that's something that I was also highly critical of, that he was not necessarily a defensive presence whatsoever. But I don't know. I'd still take OKC. I just like how they're built. Once again, I'm saying Russell Westbrook is playing much better. The efficiency is on the terrible, but he's making the best out of what he has. Jeremy Grant, he's playing much better, and I can't wait until they get Andre Roberson back to see how much better their defense, or how much worse their offense, for that matter.
All right, moving on to the next one. This is kind of for Corey and I. Spencer Dinwiddie and Domantas Sabonis, two guys, you know, in the top of the six-man race.
You still want everybody? You want everybody to vote on this one?
No.
Yeah.
They're excluding us, Nick. No, don't worry.
Okay. No, yeah, I want to hear you guys.
Keep it in the Nets and Pacers fans.
Okay, no, it's Dinwiddie for me. Still, yeah.
It's tough. But no, give me Sabonis.
I mean, you know, Nick, you want to pick Sabonis? I'll pick Dinwiddie. You want to?
No.
I'm going with Sabonis.
I'm going with Dinwiddie here. I think, you know, he did have his worst game of the season probably yesterday, but he can create on his own and really carry the team, and he's extremely clutch. I think Sabonis on him, the one he would have, I think Sabonis is probably a little bit better defender, obviously better rebounder, but Dinwiddie could come out there and change a game by himself where he doesn't have to worry about a player passing the ball or anything like that.
I'm sorry, can we just Sabonis's lines are ridiculous. Have you seen this guy's efficiencies? He's shooting 63% from the field, 83% from three, and 74% from the line. Ridiculous.
But Sabonis's per minute production is something on another level. Maybe one of the best in the league, on par with Montrezl Harrell, maybe. And that's just why I like him so much. I'm just desperate. I need the Pacers to do something, given more minutes, trade Miles Turner, do whatever. But I want to see Sabonis on a high. Yeah, I know you might not agree, Corey. I just want to see Sabonis on a, you know, as a starter and a big time player, and see what he can do on the biggest of roles.
Yeah, I mean Sabonis' numbers, like the per 36 minutes, are ridiculous. He'd be averaging 21 and 14 if he was playing per 36 minutes. Offensive rating with him on the floor this year is 119. Defensive rating is 100. Those are both career highs for him.
Damn.
And just 24 minutes of action, obviously off the bench. I mean, Dinwiddie definitely puts up more flashy numbers. He also plays, I think, he probably plays more than 25 minutes a game, right?
He plays 29, close to 30. More with Caris LeVert being out, too.
Right.
And he's asked to create a lot more, where Sabonis, I don't think, is asked to create as much by himself as Dinwiddie is asked to create for himself and the rest of the team.
Yeah, Sabonis isn't charged with creating the offense, but he's charged with providing offense, if that makes sense. Because the bench unit is really, if you watch the Pacers, their second unit, the entire offensive scheme for the second unit is pick and roll with Sabonis. That is basically what the bread and butter is. Get Tyreke Evans and Corey Joseph putting Sabonis in the pick and roll and let him work. And Jorge, we're not trading Miles Turner anymore. I don't know if you realize, but Miles Turner became a center overnight, a pretty good one too. I agree. I think their roles are different, but I think both of these guys are absolutely critical to any success both teams have, because if Sabonis isn't scoring 14.5 off the bench, the Pacers don't have a lot of star power. So you need to have guys like that providing off the bench. And then for the Nets, I mean, Dinwiddie's probably their best playmaker, right, Nick?
Probably their best player with LeVert out.
Right.
Wow. Like, something great about Dinwiddie is that he can just, you know, whenever D'Angelo's not feeling it, Atkinson can just pull him off and get Dinwiddie in, and he's going to get the job done, because that's just how
Dinwiddie
good he is.
Dinwiddie closes out games more consistently than D'Angelo does.
And which is crazy to think, because D'Angelo has a little bit more of experience, right, even though he's younger.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's within like 20 games, but you're right. He has played more games in the NBA, because that's actually really cool that you know that, Jorge. But because Dinwiddie's been in the G League, he hasn't played as many games in the NBA. But Kenny seems to like Dinwiddie more than D'Angelo when it comes to late game situations.
That's sad to hear.
I think it has to do with the defense a little bit.
Well, yeah, but
that's for another whole show on the Brooklyn Buzz. If anyone's catch that, shameless plug.
You deserve it.
Thanks, Jorge. On to our next duo. Well, this is two teams again. Lakers and Rockets.
Lakers.
Lakers.
Right now, I have to take the Lakers as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair right now. Is there any possibility you guys think that the Rockets could surpass them later on in the season, or the Lakers are definitely better for the whole year out?
LeBron retires.
No. Yeah, no, Rockets, if Rockets can recapture the glory, like, by all means, you know, like, I can see these Lakers being sort of locked into a no better than a 3-4 seed situation, but if the Rockets can recapture last year's form, which kind of seems like a tall order now, I think they have just as many losses right now as they did all of last year, so that might be a little bit of a tough ask, but the Rockets' overall ceiling might be a little bit higher if Chris Paul and James Harden are both clicking again like they were, and they're not suffering from no wing defense.
Yeah, I find it ridiculous how, like, I didn't think losing, Ariza and Mbamutin, like, these small role players, who apparently were not so small at the end of the day, but, like, I didn't think losing them would make would make the team this much worse. But and then of course you have the Chris Paul injury, whatever. But yeah, as Nick said, if Chris Paul, James Harden, and Clint Capella are all clicking, Eric Gordon is making his shots, Gerald Green is making off balance crazy threes, just like they were last year, then I think they do have a chance. Just because the Rockets can quickly turn instant offense out of nowhere with five guys, and the Lakers are more like kind of a little bit more reliant on LeBron, and that's understandable because how of, you know, because of his greatness. But for now, I think we can comfortably have the Lakers above.
I think that's very fair. On to the next one, I guess I had to throw one in for Jorge. Hornets or the Heat?
No, don't even get me into this one. It's obviously Miami. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm going to back Jorge up. Miami.
Hey!
I'm gonna go with the Hornets.
Okay, can I go first in this one?
Sure.
So Miami's much more all around, whereas the Hornets are very highly dependent on Kemba Walker. And I mean, I guess the Heat don't have a talent as close, well, a player as closely as talented as Kemba Walker. I guess Jay Rich is our best player right now. But I think the Heat can just attack from so many different angles. You know, we have Bam, we have Hassan clicking, we have Jay Rich, we have Point Justice who's on a mission. Magruder can just hit threes. And then you think about the Hornets and it's like, okay, Nick Batum, inconsistent. Jeremy Lamb, inconsistent. Michael Gilchrist, inconsistent. And it's Kemba and
Jeremy Lamb's good. Lamb's good.
Marvin Williams? And well, that's like kind of it. And I
old
just
Tony Parker. Do not underestimate Tony Parker.
Well,
Tony Parker cooked last night.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And I know I'm super biased, but
at least like, admit it.
I'm slightly biased, let's say. But I'll still like, I don't know. I'll just take Miami.
Yeah. No. Like just really quickly wrapping up, like from Jorge's point, is just like the Heat's floor to me is a lot higher than the Hornets' floor, right? Like the Hornets sometimes on occasional nights look like a bottom three, bottom four team in the league versus the Heat, like at least under Spoelstra with the roster composition they have, they're at least a little bit more consistent, right? Now, who has the higher ceiling on a really good night? That's a little bit more up for discussion, right? Like, but I'd have to go with Miami on both nights, and especially in a seven-game playoff series. I would see Miami pulling that one out.
I mean, if Miami's fully healthy, I think it's probably Miami easily for me, but with their current injuries, Dragic out for 2 months, right? Something like that. Deion Waiters kind of just out there looming.
No, don't get him. No, I don't want him back. Please.
I mean, he's looming whether you want him or not, but,
I don't want him.
And obviously Kemba Walker's taking a step back. It's pretty clear that he's not putting up quite the same numbers as he was earlier. The percentages have dipped a little bit, which is natural.
On a lot of tough shots. Like he hit a lot of tough shots.
Yeah. And he's forced to take a lot of tough shots.
Exactly.
So you remember when I came on the outlet earlier this season and I just was like bashing Kemba Walker and all of you were like, no, you're crazy. There's no way he falls. Oh, I think we're talking about the MVP conversation.
Well, yeah, and but like, that's
hell no, he's out of the top five.
Well, no, like, well, yeah, but at that point, we were right. And he was playing like an MVP at that point in time. We were right still at that point in time.
Well,
obviously now.
Well, I guess that's a fair point, but
he's not even in my top 10 now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Out of the top 10. And it's just – well, it kind of got hot because of the Heat, but I'm taking Miami every night.
You want to know one impressive stat for Miami? They're 8-13 against Eastern Conference teams. They're 9-4 against Western Conference teams. That's pretty impressive.
We're winning the NBA Finals. Bottom line. Well, you can go against West teams if you don't beat the whole East first. So I guess that's a no-no.
That's true.
It's like Jorge's article. The Heat will lose the first round in the East, but they'd win in the West.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think that like that all of those wins in the West were like maybe five of them or four of them were part of this last road trip they had where they played maybe like six or seven games on the road. And as I say, they were in four or five of them. So they have not played like that many competitive teams because they played the Suns and then they played.
What do you mean? They beat the Pelicans. They beat the Rockets. They beat the Grizzlies. They beat the Clippers. They beat the Jazz. Those are
well, yeah.
There's only one bad team in the West.
That's impressive. Yeah. That's quite impressive. I've seen most of those games. the full games, but the Pelicans were shorthanded. I'm not downplaying what they have done, but I still think they have some ways to go. And I'm very excited to see what they can do now with Justice Winslow on, well, as a full-time point guard. I'll plug the Here's Gonna Heat podcast later, too.
All right, but that wraps it up for the best of two. Corey, I'm going to pass it to you.
All right, so we're playing Guess the Line. Basically, I'm going to give you guys a player's, you know, what they're averaging per game, their shooting splits, and you guys are going to guess who it is. It's a point system. We're turning this into a game. So if you guess it on the first try, you get 3 points. Then I'll give you guys a hint about what conference they're in. If you guess at that time, you get 2 points. If I have to tell you what division they're in, it's only a one-point answer. So we'll make this a little bit interesting, and we'll see who wins. I got six guys here.
Hey, let's go.
How about you tell – are you going to tell us their position to start or no?
I'm going
to
tell you if they're a starter or a role player.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you tell us if they're a guard, wing, or a big, or no?
Yeah. I think you'll be able to tell by the line whether or not they're a guard or a wing. But if not, I can, yeah, well, if you guys get the first one wrong, I'll be open to like letting you ask a guess question or a hint. All right. So first guy, would it be easy if I just told you the, at least the conference first?
Yeah.
Okay. So
that limits at least a half.
Yeah. So Eastern Conference. Eastern Conference, he averages 15.6 points per game, 4.4 rebounds per game, 5.1 assists per game on shooting splits of 50, 34, and 73, and he averages 1.3 steals per game. Who am I?
Ooh.
Is that Gordon Hayward?
And he's a starter. And he is a starter.
Oh, no, I take it back.
No, it's not Hayward. Hayward isn't putting up 15 a game.
I don't know. Like,
he's only putting up 9, I think.
You said 5 assists?
Yeah.
5 assists and 15.
So every average guard in the league. No.
And he's shooting 50% from the field.
Oh, boy.
I feel like this is one from Miami, and Corey's just tricking me. Like,
5 point, actually, it's 5.6 assists per game.
Is it Josh Richardson?
No.
No, it's not Jay Rich.
The Knicks out for this round of guessing.
All right.
15 points.
50% from the field is super efficient.
Is that? Oh, my God.
You guys got to guess a little bit quicker. We still got
two. Yeah, I have no idea.
I'm moving on, too.
All right, so no one got it right. It's in the Central Division.
Darren Collison?
No.
Is that Reggie Jackson?
No.
Ugh.
Nick, you get the last answer before I give out the answer. Last guess.
Oh, I get another one?
Yeah. You get a guess at each level. So you got one more guess.
Oh, geez. In the Central Division, eh?
Yeah.
Is that Stanley Johnson?
No.
Malcolm Brogdon? Right. Malcolm Brogdon, just if I want to throw one out there.
No, it's Eric Bledsoe.
I knew it was one of those point guards, and for some reason, I just thought Reggie Jackson.
All right, so everyone is tied, so it's zero. Good start. All right, next up, Eastern Conference starter. I average 15.2 points per game, 2.7 rebounds per game, 4.4 assists per game on shooting splits of 40, 34, and 87. I am a starter. Who am I?
Is that Tim Hardaway Jr.?
No.
What was the stat line one more time?
15.2 per game, 2.7 rebounds per game, 4.4 assists per game on shooting splits of 40, 34, and 87, and I am a starter.
From the Eastern Conference starter, 15 points. Is that Jason Tatum?
No. Good guess, though. I think his shooting numbers are really close to that.
I have no idea. It's impossible to do it without the division. There's no way to get it because there's too many guys averaging like around the teens.
Yeah, you're right.
Central, you have to guess?
Central Division. No, Nick can pass it. Central Division.
So 15, 3, and 4. And the shooting is pretty inefficient. So Central Division, yeah, Pistons, Pacers.
Justin Holiday?
No.
Knowles.
Lauri Markkanen?
No. This is terrible.
I'm missing. Is this
Say it.
Chris Milton?
No, it's Reggie Jackson.
Oh. Oh, why you had to do me like that?
All right. So we got. All right. I'm just gonna go right to the division this time instead of getting at the conference.
Yeah, we're terrible at this.
Pacific Division. I average 15.3 points per game, 3.7 rebounds per game, 3.3 assists per game on shooting splits of 44, 36, and 79. And I come off of the bench. Who am I?
How many points? Sorry.
15.3.
Lou Will?
Bench.
No.
Off the bench, 15.3. That's pretty good. How many boards again? Sorry.
3.7.
Oh, so that's
not. Is that Justin Jackson?
No.
So there has to be a spark plug off the bench. Is that Pacific? I have no idea. Is that, I don't know, TJ Warren?
No, it's Bogdan Bogdanovic from the Kings.
Honestly, I was going to guess him, but I wasn't 100% sure if he was coming off the bench or not anymore.
Yeah, he started in four games, but he's been coming off the bench mostly. He came off the bench the other night against the Pacers.
He's a nice young piece, that's for sure.
Yeah, that is for sure.
Why
all right,
so bad in this game?
another Pacific guy. This is a starter. I'm averaging 20.9 points per game, 4.2 rebounds, 2.1 assists. On shooting splits of 44, 33, and 80, who am I?
Klay Thompson.
Yes, you are.
Right. Oh, bang. First shot.
Ooh, I looked up his stats like last week. I think we talked about it on the last outlet.
The 33% three-point shooting gave it away because I saw it just like last night.
It's the worst of his career.
Yeah, so somebody pointed out that like Justice is shooting 38 and Klay is like 33 and people were going crazy over that. So
all right. So we're at the last one. Jorge, you can make a three-way tie off and make another one up on the fly. If not, one of the Knicks can win the segment on this guy. All right. Central Division again. There's a trend here. 12.9 points per game, 7.2 rebounds per game, 1.7 assists per game, 2.8 blocks per game on shooting splits of 50, 35, and 71. Who am I?
Miles Turner. No! No, the Bucks gave it away.
I got it, Corey?
Yeah, you got it.
Oh,
you beat me. That was a buzzer beater.
Wait a minute. Let me see if I can come up with one more on the fly.
Right.
Non-central. Try something non-central.
Yeah.
Tri-Atlantic. Tri-Atlantic. That's actually fair for Nick and I because that's who's competing right now. No offense, Jorge.
Okay.
Let's see.
Atlantic has the Nets and the Raptors, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, wait. Am I done in this competition?
No, you're in it. The hell? You're still here, aren't you?
You can tie for a second.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I want to tie for a second. I don't want to be last.
All right. I don't want to make it – just so you guys – no, I can't tell you that. That doesn't help. That just makes it easier for you. All right. Let's see if I can find a somewhat hard one on the – oh, okay. I got one. Atlantic Division. I'm averaging
– like the 15th player of the team.
I'm averaging 14.3 points per game, 3.7 assists, 3.0 rebounds on shooting splits of 46, 31, and 73 – and I am a starter. Who am I?
Starter from the Central Division.
No, it's Atlantic.
Atlantic.
Oh, I mean Atlantic.
What were the assists again?
3.7.
14 a game.
I think I might know who this is.
Well, shout it out.
Is this Jaylen Brown?
No.
I'm out.
Give us a stat line one more time, Corey.
14.3 points per game, 3.7 assists per game, 3.0 rebounds per game on shooting splits of 46, 32, and 74 if you round it up.
Can you give us the other stats?
Is that Emmanuel Mudiay?
What else do you want? Yeah, it is.
Oh! You're coming in clutch.
All right, wait a minute. We got a tie. I got to find one more now.
Oh.
We gotta end with a winner. Thinking of somebody. Of ooh, I got a good one. Okay. I am a
what division?
What?
Same division?
No, we're going into God damn it, I don't want to go into the Pacific again.
Northwest. Go northwest.
Go southeast.
Jesus, guys. Relax. I'm flipping out divisions at me. Blazers. No, I can't tell you the time.
You gotta change it. You're giving it away.
Oh man, that's terrible.
Blazers.
Oh man, that's horrible. I'm hitting a mental block on who I could get. All right, no, I got one. All right, so we're gonna do the Southeast Division. Okay, here we go. I am a starter. I average. I average 15.5 points per game on shooting splits of 44. Oh, that's not right. I average 15.5 points per game, 5.7 rebounds per game, 2 assists, 1 steal on 44, 35, and 86 shooting splits.
Is Southeast, you said?
Southeast and a starter.
15 a game.
On shooting splits of 45, 35, and 87.
All right, Jorge, you're Southeast. You got to go first.
Is this Jeremy Lamb?
Come on, Jorge. You're not even in this anymore. Yeah.
Damn, that was my guess. I was hoping he was going to pick Josh Richardson so I could limit it down to Lamb.
Was that Jeremy Lamb, actually?
Yeah.
Oh,
and I was like, Corey would have made my life easy. I mentioned Lamb earlier in the show. I didn't think that he would pick the name that I already mentioned.
That's actually why I did it, because I figured that maybe he won't think. I actually thought about doing Portland anyways, just to be a dick, but
I screwed it up. Damn.
Sorry. We're gonna do one more. Okay, this is in the Pacific Division again. I am a starter and I average 19.5 points per game, 6.2 rebounds per game, 2.4 assists per game on shooting splits of 46, 46, and 92.
Tobias Harris?
No.
Is this De'Aaron?
No. You can win it all right now if you guess right.
Drum roll.
Is this Gallinari?
Yes, it is.
Oh! Wow, that was a great guess.
The first ever game, well,
guess who?
Competition version of guess who.
All right, guys, that wraps it up. As always, thank everybody for listening. Always a pleasure talking to you guys, Hoops. And you check out the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Always a pleasure, guys. Peace out, knuckleheads.
Yeah, see y'all later.
Peace out.